the Business of Sport, brought to you by Sports Finder. I am your host, Ahmed Al-Houli, and my co-host, Mr. Rob Biel. Like we do every week, we have a range of topics that we come to you live with. We chit chat, we go deep, we analyze, we break things down. And this week, it's no different. Mr. Rob, how you going, buddy?
How you doing? Another great week of sport and crowning champions. More messy influence, and across the board, some exciting things to chat about this week.
Absolutely. I mean, some big news across the sporting world this week. We had a few interesting things happen. We'll start up the top where a world that you're very familiar with. Crypto.com halts all operations in the USA. I mean, the SEC chairman Gary Gensler is on a crypto killing spree at the moment. It's almost like he's eliminating all of FTX's old competitors. So it's a big deal. They've spent over $1 billion on sporting assets around the world over the last few years. The iconic Staples Center got changed to now Crypto.com Arena, the home of the Lakers. What does this mean to the world of sport in the U.S.?
Well, in the U.S., it's certainly something, we kind of obviously watch this unravel with FTX and Crypto.com, came out and was very, committed to their relationships, business as usual, obviously made the appropriate adjustments where they needed to. But given Gensler's latest, attack on the industry, it's making it hard, suing Coinbase and Binance, who are obviously two, sponsors as well with, the NBA and a few other opportunities that they're involved in. It's making it hard to kind of conduct generate accounts and conduct business in this market. So the suspension of those U.S. operations certainly damages their activation in this marketplace. But the properties that they hold, Formula One, UFC, Crypto.com Arena, the jersey position on the Philadelphia 76ers, at some level, they still have global impact. So for them, the logic behind them not being a potential FTX scenario is that they still have global assets and still can leverage them on a global scale. But they will be obviously very difficult to activate around Vegas and Austin, Texas, around those two Grand Prix with Formula One. Obviously, Crypto.com Arena still is, generates, global, viewing. But there's probably not going to be a lot of, account signups. They still can certainly, take care of account holders and things like that at the arena. But it will be interesting to watch kind of one, more importantly, what they do moving forward. But what I don't anticipate is this, this big, unraveling of sports sponsorship, but you may see them really shift their activation platforms and how they utilize hospitality, certainly at those venues that have it moving forward. And we talked about it when FTX happened. It was obviously a very lucrative category that was spending heavily and somewhat drunkenly in the sports space. And the FTX was a correction, but now this is not as much a industry correction as it is, at some level, a response to an outright attack on their capability of doing business here in the United States. They have to be prudent business people at some point and figure out, where they can actually monetize. And it appears to be anywhere but the U.S. at this point.
Well, it's actually very interesting what's currently happening. I watched an interview for Brian Armstrong, the founder and CEO of Coinbase. And he said over the last 12 months, they've tried to organize a meeting with the SEC chairman countless times. Over the last 2 years, countless times. They've never, ever, ever been able to sit with the chairman face-to-face and understand why he's doing this. Number two, they've had over 30 meetings in the last year alone to come to some sort of resolution and understand what's happening with the industry. They've been proactive. They're a publicly listed company. They IPO'd at like $100 billion. They have thousands, tens of thousands of investors. So Coinbase has said, we're going to take the fight to the SEC and get some clarity and some understanding. What is going on? Nobody's been able to give answers. So we've had a few people from Congress now start to get involved, and hopefully we'll see some clarity around what can and can't be done. The moral of the story is that there hasn't been much effort from the SEC to really sit down and iron things out. It's almost like, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist at all, but you know, it's almost like what I said before. It's almost like they're knocking out all these FTX competitors so FTX can come back when they do come back. It's just insane time. And the impact that FTX left on sport, where we had arenas naming rights having to be filled, we had teams now that had millions of dollars of sponsorship that now became pretty much vacant. So it's really vast and impactful. And there doesn't seem to be that receptive care by the actual officials. So it's becoming a real problem. Europe, China, even parts of Africa, South America are all in on crypto, leading the world in technology. The US is the home of innovation. The US is where the world looks to for innovation. And now we're having to copy what's happening in Europe and so on in terms of the actual regulations and so on. So it's probably not the best of times for the world of crypto, but we hope there can be some sort of resolution, because there's a lot of sporting assets that could be impacted if these players do go under.
Yeah, certainly with Copa America and World Cup heading our way in the next several years, there's many national teams coming from countries with crypto partnerships involved, and certainly the plan was to activate them here in the U.S. and that's to be determined. And like you said, there's a lot of questions that from a straight business standpoint. I mean, and this is no different than how betting felt for a while in the spirit industry when they were blocked out of certain of being able to advertise around sport. They wanted answers. They wanted regulation. They wanted to participate. And obviously when those categories opened, they became, flush spenders, just like, crypto.com did and FTX and that industry. And now we've got, the SEC, trying to tell us the dollar is a digital asset, which it's not. And, Just shoot it straight. We're printing dollars. We're not digitizing them. It's one of those things that the explanation that you do get leads to more questions. Certainly as it pertains to those of us that work with these companies from a sponsorship standpoint, those companies themselves that operate, in the crypto and blockchain space as well, they need answers, and more importantly, you've got teams and organizations and properties that have significant relationships with these companies that kind of need to know heading into next year or in future years, is that a partnership that we need to look to replace, because at some point those companies are going to cease operations, cease being able to conduct business. And at some point, you know, just what you don't want is that what happened with FTX, just, you know, 1 minute they're there and then the next minute, poof, they're gone. And you're in the middle of a name change.
Yeah, I mean, I know of literally businesses that have, that were solely reliant on FTX and have disappeared since, like, not even larger businesses, businesses in the world of NIL that were, had a ton of these sponsorship and marketing deals and have now literally halted all business because they're gone. So believe it or not, there'd be similar businesses that have these relationships with crypto.com and Binance and Coinbase. Well, this morning, in good news for the industry, Coinbase took obviously the SEC's decision to halt all their operations in the US to the Supreme Court, and it got overturned. So they can right. they can pretty much keep going again. So it's just the impact that it leaves purely based on I'm trying to be polite here. Negligence by these officials. It's just the people just don't care anymore. It's just like, doesn't matter what happens, as long as I get my way and my agenda and my people, it's fine. So you
know. Right. Yeah, I mean, at some point, it's not even negligence. It's sometimes it's almost you know, ignorance at some level. You know, they don't understand it, and if they don't understand it, they're frightened of it. And the best way, and if they don't want to educate themselves, they just want to eliminate it. And unfortunately, that's pervading in lots of areas of society globally. And you know, if you don't like someone, you don't want to try to have dialogue with them. You want to eliminate them from the conversation. You block them. You delete them. You indict them, as we're finding out today as well. So I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, look, we're a society of conversationalists and want to, you know, expand our knowledge base and why, you know, we shouldn't be afraid of new things. I mean, certainly the technology itself in general is fascinating. And we've seen fantastic technology get applied to our industry, you know, with facial recognition and security and health, related matters and why wouldn't we want the same as it comes to transactional and fan engagement and interaction, those types of things. And if it's an industry that's robust and supporting, not only providing jobs, but supporting sports properties and industries and helping, you know, provide, you know, entertainment, you know, it just kind of, you know, befuddles me to the point to why, you know, a government agency would look to, you know, eliminate it unless they have something that they're looking to gain by eliminating that competition. So, I, you know, all speculative, we don't know. But I mean, at this point, we're hopeful that, you know, there's more rulings in favor of Coinbase or crypto.com or at least there's an explanation that provides a path for them to conduct their business and move forward in the long term. Because obviously we have relationships with a client with XBTO that's very involved in that space and have a significant relationship with a club that became extremely popular in the last week to the tune of about another 6 million Instagram followers. So obviously there's a lot riding on this, and hopefully, you know, there is a little bit more dialogue, cooler heads prevail, and there is some, you know, some good, some positive results so everybody can move forward.
Absolutely. Well, the good news is that Coinbase has taken the fight personally, and they're going for it. So I believe in Brian Armstrong and his people. He's been a man who stood by his principles no matter what has been thrown at him. So we're definitely in good hands. Anyway, moving on to our next topic, our next segment. This guy seems to absolutely turn literally soil into gold or trash into gold. Whatever he touches just becomes gold. Stan Kroenke's Denver Nuggets take out the championship. What is going on?
Well, we addressed this, the last couple of weeks in just conversation of just, tipping our cap to the ownership that Stan Kroenke, the ownership of Stan, this succession of championships. And he added another one last night with the Nuggets, bringing home the NBA championship for the first time in the history of the organization. A gentleman's sweep, as they say, 4-1, and probably not their best game of the entire playoffs, and they still found a way to win. I mean, shooting, 17% from threes. They were missing free throws. They were in foul trouble, and the Heat was in control until midway through the fourth quarter, and. We go back to just tipping the cap to Stan of his philosophy of hiring executives and leadership within his teams, providing them with the resources that they need in order to conduct their job, and letting them being a supportive owner, not a meddling one. And of course, the people in St. Louis may object to that a little bit. Because that's probably the one, case where he probably did get a little involved in the activity of the franchise so that it could move to Los Angeles. But look, it's turned to be a gold mine with SoFi Stadium and the success the Rams have had in Los Angeles. And he certainly has, proven to have, three championship winning organizations in Denver with the Avalanche winning Stanley Cup last year. The Mammoth winning the NIL championship and then NBA championship last night with the Nuggets. And, we mentioned and alluded to the success that Arsenal had, a little resurgence that Arsenal had this year, finishing second in the Premier League and qualifying the Champions League. And, the Rams didn't have a great year, but 2 years ago they won the Super Bowl in their home stadium. So Stan's had a fantastic run. And I think I was talking with one of my colleagues that works for the organization and running, the Ball Arena. He worked with me at Staples Center, and we saw the Lakers win three championships, and we saw a generation of fans, celebrating, championships that hadn't been won, since, the Showtime Lakers. And to see... he was talking about, fans that he's seen for the last, 15 years that he's been working there in Denver, Nuggets fans, last year you saw the Avalanche fans, which had experienced, many of them had experienced the Stanley Cup, in the early 2000s, but, Nuggets fans had never, he equated it to, those Chicago Cubs fans when they finally won the World Series. These Nuggets fans have been through the ABA and a merger into the NBA and have had very, very good teams that fell short. Jokic has been a two-time MVP, and for whatever reason was the voters felt that he didn't deserve a third MVP, and maybe he didn't deserve a third MVP. Because maybe he didn't deserve one of the ones before, but this year, so he took that, call it a slight, didn't get the MVP and did something that never been done in the NBA playoffs. He led his team to the championship and led everybody in scoring, rebounding, and assists as a big man. Never been done before. Never been done as a player. He had 10 triple doubles, most ever in a playoff series. He passed Wilt Chamberlain, who is by many listed as one of the best big men to ever play this game. Kareem never did this. Shaq never did this. Tim Duncan never did this. Giannis has obviously never done this. I mean, we're talking about a historic run, but he wasn't the MVP. The MVP actually got knocked out in the semifinals and actually, didn't carry his team to the next level. So it's one of those things that there's a lot of great stories that played itself out. And in the long run, the best competition that these Nuggets had in the playoffs were the Phoenix Suns, who took two games off of them, probably should have taken the third and could have taken them to seven. And the Suns just fired their coach and, you know, are kind of, you know, looking at what they need to do now to compete with that team in Denver, which looks to be getting, you know, returning most of the people back. They had, you know, very good, you know, star player performance, fantastic performance from their bench and role players. You know, they've got a great coach, great owner. But as we've seen, the West is the toughest division. You've still got the Lakers will be back. The Warriors will be back. Sacramento's coming. We've got, you know, you've got a young team in Memphis that is looking to make a push. The Phoenix Suns aren't going anywhere. So look, you know, there is a very good chance that the Denver Nuggets don't get back to the finals next year, much less win another one. So, you know, tip your cap, congratulations to them. Happy for, you know, for an organization to win it for the first time because it's special. You know, it just so happens to be a Stan Kroenke owned team. Doesn't surprise any of us that they're well run. They have fantastic resources. They got a great facility, got a wonderful fan base, and they're probably still celebrating tonight, and as they should. You know, just, you know, now they wear the bullseye, and let's see, you know, how they react as the defending champs when everybody they play wants to knock them off. It's tough. It's great to be the hunter in a lot of cases, and it's a different thing when you're the hunted. And so that will be the first time in the organization's history that they will wear the bullseye, and let's see how they react to it. But for now, congratulations to them and to all those folks in Denver that waited 47 years for this. Enjoy it.
Very interesting. Do we have much of an insight on how much a championship makes a difference on the commercial side of things?
Well, yeah, of course, the value of your season tickets just went up. Your merchandise starting to get sold a lot more. You're selling a lot of championship merchandise, you know, to commemorate this. You now have that. You get that little gold tab on the back of your jersey that says you're a championship organization. And that means a lot. And yeah, you know, just across the board, you will see an uptick in pricing, you know, tickets and sponsorship and radio advertising and all the other elements. Because now, you're talking about the world champion, Denver Nuggets, when you're partnering with an organization. So yeah, there's a typical uptick, and you know, maybe it's a, you know, 10-15% type of boost, you know, initially. But you know, if this were an organization that was going back to market with its jersey patch, you might see a nice little $1 million boost on that. You will likely see a boost, you know, a boost in premium ticket sales, you know, for court side seats and, those high end luxury assets, because, you know, now you've got some more amenities. Hey, we're going to have the Larry O'Brien Trophy in the, you know, in the VIP lounge, or you get, you know, you're able to do things like that. So, yeah, you're going to see a little bit of uptick in those areas. And, you know, the goal is to keep doing it. When you're winning back-to-back titles or winning three titles in 5 years, like what the Warriors did, win a three-peat like the Lakers did in the early 2000s, you know, those are, those are massive capitalization opportunities, you know, for an organization, because you're becoming a dynasty. You know, we talk about that with a lot of these organizations that have won multiple championships. And the Nuggets also did something that was rare, in the sense that the way they went through the series, 16-4, I think, was their playoff record. That is the best record for a team winning its first championship. 16-4 was reserved for teams that were defending champions, that were dynasty teams. They were the Bulls. They were the Lakers. They were the, you know what the Heat did on in their back-to-back years, what the Warriors had done. I mean, those are the types of runs that organizations that, you know, have won multiple championships were doing. This was the first time that a first-time winner went through the, you know, just basically just ripped through the playoffs. So, you know, leaves a lot of question, or not a lot of question, but it certainly puts the NBA on notice that not only the Nuggets, you know, were they a great team this year. I mean, you know, when the Bucks won it a couple years ago, you know, you had the Warriors weren't in it that year. They were facing the Suns, who was getting to the playoff, you know, to the championship for the first time. You had a lot of things go your way. And obviously they didn't even get out of what the second round or the first round the next, you know, or second round the next year. And they got eliminated in the first round this year. And then their coach got fired, 2 years after winning the championship. Here is an organization that doesn't appear to be taking any step back. They've got arguably one of the top five players in the league in Jokic. They've got another fantastic player in Jamal Murray. They've got a top five coach in Mike Malone. You've got an organization, you know, run by Stan Kroenke that's going to give you the resources. So they are a team that appears to be on the front end of a dynasty run. Look out. Here we go. They're going to be fun to watch. I think they've got one player that's Bruce Brown, that's a free agent. I think everybody else is under contract for next year. So, or of significance, I should say, is under contract. And they're poised to be a team to be reckoned with for the years to come. So, for those selling the tickets and luxury suites and sponsorship, that's a great thing. But for those general managers in the West and the rest of the NBA, that's a nightmare. For you and I, we get to just enjoy it, you know, as people, you know, working in the sports business, and let's see what happens. Because again, is it Phoenix's year next year? Is it, will the Heat break through again? Do the Celtics come back? Is it finally the Sixers with a coaching change? Who knows? You know, we're just getting ready to go. We got the draft in a week's time. So we'll start seeing some of the new fresh blood coming out of college in Europe, coming into the NBA. San Antonio has the first pick. Last time they had the first pick, they got some guy named Duncan. They went on to win five championships with that guy. Who knows? Look out. Brace ourselves for the next generation, but celebration for the for the Nuggets and Stan Kroenke again. Another cigar being smoked by Stan the man.
The Stan Kroenke effect continues. Let's move on to our next talking point. There was some news that came in overnight. It's a bit upended news. Some say it's confirmed, some say it's not. I'll get into it. Sheikh Jassim, the head of the Qatar National Bank, it's been believed that the Glazers have actually accepted his £6 billion offer, which is a crazy price when you come to think of it. It's probably $7 billion US plus, if not more, once you convert it. It's been a really drawn-out process. It's taken a while to get to this outcome. His office has denied the speculation, but I think it's there. They're just, when people play hardball till things are 100% confirmed. So if this deal does come through, unfortunately, being a Liverpool fan, Manchester United are going to be an unbelievable team again. And it's going to create something that we've never seen in a Premier League before. You're going to have the Qataris, Manchester United, the Emiratis, Manchester City, the Saudis, Newcastle United. And you even have an Egyptian billionaire who owns Aston Villa. So the Arab presence in the Premier League is growing and the rivalries are going to be tense, especially between the first three I mentioned, because they have sovereign wealth funds backing them up. We've seen Manchester City spend tens of billions of dollars and they've built a portfolio of other teams that they've bought around the world, and like 38, between 38 and 40 teams. I can't remember the exact figure. It changes by the week with them. They seem to be buying teams all the time. They've had issues with financial fair play. They've had issues with UEFA, with FIFA, so with the Premier League themselves. And then we've seen this another prince who's come in from, who bought Newcastle United, who's an absolute behemoth, who is very aggressive, is very determined, and is revolutionizing the way Saudi Arabia will be looked at over the next 100 years through the things that he's been building. And one of his key paths to diversifying his economy away from petroleum is sport. Sport seems to be the focus of the world. We are living in the golden age of sport. People, please, there's no other influence in the world right now like sport. All the billionaires of the world, all the sovereign wealth funds, all the politicians are all interested in sport. A lot of them are pushing their messaging through. A lot of them are pushing whatever they want through. It's happening right now. But anyway, so Manchester United, Manchester City, they're rivals without the tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars. Imagine the rivalry now moving forward.
Well, you know, we saw the ads that have come out, you know, given the FA Cup derby a few weeks ago, and just in general with those two clubs, traditional longtime rivals, and it used to be a united town, and the recent history has it, you know, with City having more success now, if this is true, and it appears to be true, because I'm hearing that Jim Ratcliffe and his camp will be having an opportunity to assume you know, full ownership of the Mercedes team in F1, you know, after this season. So that alone could be another significant purchase where, you know, he may be putting his attention to Formula One, obviously, and his, and the Ineos cycling team as another. But yes, I mean, we've talked about, you know, the PIF and just the influence and that the Saudi, you know, funds have had in sport. You know, certainly Qatar, you know, hosted a World Cup. We've seen, you know, the Emirates PSG. Have been, you know, PSG, you know, and the, you know, Emirates has been, you know, a strong supporter of sport during COVID, and certainly with their outreach, you know, in sport ownership, and as competitive as the, you know, the, you know, Manchester City is in the Premier League in general, you know, as clubs in the top, you know, soccer league in the world, now you have competition in the owner's box, and a competition that, you know, has, you know, is centuries old, not just, you know, not decades, or, you know, it goes back, you know, to, you know, countries and culture and all these things that, you know, big brother, little brother, hey, I, you know, I want to do what he's doing. And now you're going to have unlimited resources. We did see, you know, City, you know, win the treble this year. Thankfully, their competitive, their financial fair play ruling was suspended for the present time, so that they could finish this run. I do think that this will be quite some interesting theater ahead of us if with new ownership. You know, one, the fans, you know, wanted the Glazers out. They were tired of American ownership, or or in some cases, you know, they just felt that they were just a holding, that they cared more about their Tampa Bay Buccaneers than they did. And I think at some level, you know, Malcolm Glazer, you know, the patriarch, was the one that really enjoyed this. And when he passed away, his sons preferred American football. For whatever reason, they're getting a $7 billion U.S. Price, which is a nice return on something they bought for, what, $400 million? Something like that. And
20 time return. Yeah.
Yeah, not bad. We'll take that. You and I would take that. And now you've got this competition. You know, you've got Arsenal, you know, back, you know, competitive in the Premier League. You've got, Newcastle, you know, shooting up the standings this year to seize, you know, third place in a Champions League slot. You know, there's a lot of interesting drama that is going to find its way into the Premier League, you know, on the pitch and in the owner's box. And certainly, you know, those competitions are going to manifest themselves into player transfer. So, and to movement and hirings and firings, and, you know, fans are going to, you know, and we, the fans, and those of us working in the sports business, are going to be the ones to be, you know, as the benefactors of this, because it's going to be good theater. And there's going to be some interesting business deals. We're seeing some of that stuff starting to play itself out with, you know, certainly Newcastle has signed, a new shirt sponsor, which we talked about a few weeks ago. They now have a new sleeve sponsor that's coming, out of the region. That is a, competitor to Legends and in the space. And, so
Scylla.
A lot. Yeah. Scylla. Yep. So they, so all of these, you're going to start seeing with betting being pushed off the front of the shirt. You know, those are clubs that are going to have, you know, relationships with companies in other parts of the world that are now going to want to find themselves on the front of those kits in the biggest league in the world. That could be a disadvantage to your friends at Liverpool and my friends, you know, down the road that are going up at Sheffield United, and our friends at Leeds who went down, and a few others over there that were, relying on the betting category and going to be looking for new partners, don't have the direct line to, a Saudi fund or a Saudi or Middle East driven company that's like, hey, I'm good friends with the owner of that club, so if I'm going to sponsor in the Premier League, I'm going to that club. When in the past, a little bit more level playing field, but now, look, it's going to be interesting. You're going to see some new brands start to play. And we've seen that come to play in those organizations or in those teams or in those properties owned and operated, by these sovereign wealth funds or certainly ownership, from those nationalities. It's just natural. Hey, when the Glazers bought Manchester United, they brought Chevrolet on the front kit. So American ownership brought more American companies over there. This is just from a corporate standpoint, opening up a market for guys like you and me to start going, okay, there are brands over there that want to get participate. Maybe they want to participate in other things worldwide. Opening up those channels and opening up new companies to our business and, is opportunity for everyone. So, let's see how this plays out. But, I guess we still need, it's kind of like Messi. We've heard about it, but they haven't seen the signed yet. Nobody's announced anything yet. But I am getting my getting spammed with Messi jersey offers, but I can't buy one on Fanatics today. So, but there's a lot of other knockoff organizations out there that they could sell me one for $49.99. So I'll wait for the real one, as we will with this announcement. But it seems to be on its way.
Absolutely. And I was just going to get into the whole Scylla deal with Newcastle, a £25 million deal to be the front of shirt sponsor of Newcastle United He'll be playing in the Champions League next year. He'll be also aggressively buying during this transfer window in the off-season. We're going to see a very different Newcastle on and off the field. The Saudis are spending aggressively on the training facilities. They're spending aggressively stadium upgrades, and they're really focused on building this team. The other thing we're seeing is we've been promised by Sheikh Jassim, who's the bidder for Manchester United, who has supposedly been accepted at £6 billion, is that he's promised a lot of capital expenditure into community projects around Old Trafford and the upgrade of Old Trafford, as well as new training facilities. So you're paying about $7 to $8 billion US for the actual team. Then there'll be another, I'd say at least $3 to $4 billion just in spending on, you know, facilities around Old Trafford, around the training facilities and other community projects to engage the community. So from a government standpoint, from a political standpoint, it makes a lot of sense to bring this money in, because at the end of the day, the government's always in control, and there's this huge amount of money being pumped into these local markets that the government doesn't have to spend themselves. So
yeah,
they do bring a lot of benefits, and I think fans, Manchester United fans, I see them protesting for him to win because of what he brings. And a small rumor came out this morning for the famous soccer journalist or football journalist Fabrizio mentioned in a tweet. He said that PSG is looking to sell off Mbappe because he's not interested in re-signing past 2024. And they're saying this still happens. They're going to sell him to Manchester United. Because who will then own Manchester United? Sheikh Jassim, who's the cousin or one of the bloodlines of the royal family, which is Sheikh Nasser from PSG. So... they're keeping it in the family. Money makes money, and so we're going to start to see these things. We will start to see Emiratis also buying in these other major leagues, just because this will set a trend. PSG's done an unbelievable job. I mean, they have a huge store in New York that I went to, and other stores around the world from a merchandise perspective. I think they have the best merchandise. They did a deal with Jordan. The best merchandise, in my opinion, I always buy it, even though I'm not a big follower, but I just love the merchandise and the branding. So they've done some good things, and I can see that we're about to see some loops and networks being built where we only sell to each other, we only buy from each other, we develop each other's talents, and the war will be waged from league to league to league, and good luck competing.
Yeah, well, as we've seen, if you can't beat them, join them. There's going to be, it'll be interesting to play out. You know, the Mbappe rumors of certainly his communication to the club that he won't extend after next year, which obviously led initially to the Real Madrid speculation, which has been out there. But now with the family owning a Premier League club that might be in need of a striker would be a nice number. Last number 10 for them, for sure. So, you know, again, there'll be some very interesting moves for sure. Aggressive moves. And maybe a little bit more tactical than what we've seen Chelsea do. There'll be some significant moves, you know, across the Premier League this summer transfer season. And, again, you know who benefits is the fans, those Manchester United fans that had grown accustomed to dominating the Premier League, watching their little brother and their next door neighbor emerge as a giant. I think are going to embrace new ownership given the resources that will now be at the disposal of their their football department, and hopefully they can start seeing some of that translate onto the pitch. And again, a competitive, Premier League is good for us all. Let's see it happen. Like I said, pretty soon you and I'll be on these podcasts talking about the start of the Premier League season. So, it's not that far away, and there's certainly a lot of movement to still take place.
For sure. Let's move on from the world of soccer and move into the world of football, American football. XFL lost an estimated $60 million in its restart season, reboot season. It's not all doom and gloom. I think it was good that they finished the season. There's between 75 to 100 athletes, XFL athletes right now, trying out on NFL practice squads around the country, which is a very, very positive piece of news for the XFL, because like we discussed a few weeks ago, the XFL could become this league that feeds the NFL talent, and it could encourage a lot more participation and involvement, especially in terms of resources from the NFL moving forward, especially with the ownership at hand very open and getting very creative with their approach. I think that's positive. The loss, I think, is expected, especially when you have to host so many people and have so many people travel around, and there's no owners. You're pretty much paying for everything. So I think that $60 million is quite reasonable, if you ask me.
What do you think? I think that was expected. I agree. They checked the box. They finished the season. They're seeing players that played in their league getting the opportunity to in NFL camps while the USFL is still playing. XFL players are working out in NFL camps. They have what they believe, next year, based on sponsor commitments and some of their other cost reduction, I think they're looking at, working to, be a little bit more efficient in some areas. They're projecting $100 million profit next year, which is obviously a very a bold projection, but they finished the season. They had fairly decent ratings. They weren't terrible.
That was strong. That was solid.
They were solid. Yeah. And so as they move, and as they move into next year, Disney is a partner, and they've got a whole another year to promote. They're going to make. I think they've made their first coaching change. You're going to have a whole new crop of players, coming into this league. You will have some of those 75 to 80 players that are in training camps. A couple of them are going to make the league, and they're going to promote the heck out of that. They're going to promote the heck out of, four, five, six guys on NFL active rosters, even if on practice squads. That's the goal of the 54th man, was to give that guy that shot that he wasn't getting before.
And so
that story will perpetuate. I think the football will get better. I think it will get better. Coaches will coach better. Players will playing better. You'll get more, guys coming out of college that maybe, got cut from NFL teams, that are looking for that chance. I mean, you're going to get hungry dudes, in that league. I think you'll see, more and more, player involvement. You'll see more features. You'll find some great stories. Advertisers will, that maybe sat on the sidelines this year, going to step in, and get involved, next year. Those that were part of it this year, re-up, and they re-up for a little tick. So, I think that number will come down. The question was, will we see a profit? Obviously, that's going to come from, you gotta have more ticket sales, because obviously the way they were doing the, the system of practicing in one place and then sending them out to the home markets. I mean, the goal is to sell more tickets. And you know, now for the first time, they've got a season behind them, and a season to sell on into the next season, and really an ownership group that's like, hey, we're not dying, we're not going away, we're not running out of money. So that, you know, it's that sustainability and that continuity that will lead to more sponsorship for the local teams, the ability to sell more tickets, for the, you know, the league itself to sell more advertisers. And that's, and those are all positive in the financial department. And that 60 million, you know, I would say part of that was some amortized costs that, you know, to start up again. So next year, you're not going to have to assume some of those costs. Some of the costs will come down, revenues will go up. So that number will certainly squeeze. And look, if they turn a profit next year, that's huge. That'll be a huge win for a league that died twice. Once by their own hand and the other one by a pandemic. But, you know, this time around, you know, I thought they did a great job. I think strategically starting early so that they'd finish early so that players would be eligible in for these mini camps. I think it's going to work in their favor. That's certainly to be seen, but, you know, no one on our side was shocked by that number. I think no one's been discouraged by it, you know, from we're worried about the league. I think the ownership, you know, was prepared for that, but they're in it for the long haul. Let's see what next year brings. I'm excited to see it. I think the sports community has an appetite for a spring league, to your point. You know, so I think we may see some consolidation at some point, that they blend in, or maybe what we see is the XFL, you know, expanding in other markets, you know, getting creative, you know, doing something. And we're seeing some success in the love of the game in Europe. We're seeing obviously the NFL going over there and playing more games. Do we see a Canadian franchise? Do we see a, you know, maybe an XFL team in Mexico, who knows? But, you know, I wouldn't put it past The Rock or Disney to come up with those ideas and be able to move much quicker than the league, than the NFL would, as it relates to getting ownership approval for those kinds of things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's that these are the markets that they have to go after. They're sort of filling in the gaps here where the NFL hasn't gone. For whatever reason, they could potentially go and build a small market that's enough, viable enough to stay alive, build an audience, build the fan base over time, and come and compete on the big stage, the greatest country in the world, the biggest stage in the world, America. So this is what it comes down to. It comes down to how creative they get. The Rock said he's invested in this for the long term. He came out last week and said it. He goes, I'm in it for the long journey. I'm not in it to make a quick buck. We expected this. We're happy to move forward. We made great progress. We finished the season, and we have 75 to 100 young athletes participating in practice camps around the NFL. That move there, so they finish in time just for those practice camps, is absolutely brilliant. Very smart. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen that before from previous XFL owners. So it's good that he's thinking that way. Too many people were trying to take on the NFL before, so that's never going to work. This guy said, why don't we plug the hole? Why don't we become an asset for the NFL, right? And so be it. It happens that we take over one day, no problem. But we can become the biggest league in the springtime, and that's it. Move on.
Yeah, about a bounce back for guys cut and a place for guys that are, you know, finishing their college careers, you know, needing a little bit more seasoning, a stopping point on the way up, you know, to get some more reps. And, that's certainly good. I think, you know, nobody watched those games expecting NFL quality of play, but we saw some, you know, we don't expect that on Friday Night Lights either. So we just enjoy the game. And the more familiar names we start seeing, you know, from colleges or guys that maybe are trying to get that one last chance, you know, coming back from an injury, whatever it is, you know, the Rock is really you know, he wears that number 54 to every time he comes to a practice, because it's a message he drives home personally from his own experience.
He was that young guy. Talent that needed that bit more time potentially. Yeah.
And he didn't have it. He went into wrestling. He did okay, but at the end of the day, when you have unfinished business like that in your life, I mean, he is kind of manifested that into this new XFL and giving those guys, you know, that opportunity. And it's to your point, it's paying off. I think they need to adjust their playoff system, because you can't have a team with a losing record and a team, you know, with one of the top records in the league, one make it and one not, you know, those kinds of things. But hey, those are scheduling glitches, or those are results glitches that just so happen to play out that way. But, overall a successful year. They finished. Two, they've got players competing in the NFL and NFL camps. Three, they're coming back for the next year. They've got the momentum. And I think that will be something that we'll all be looking forward to, moving forward to see. We know that St. Louis is going to sell tickets. They did fantastic this year in filling the dome. San Antonio, you know, did a great job hosting the first, XFL championship again. And, I think, some of these other markets are going to step up. And, you got a great promoter in The Rock. He's going to make a couple more movies, and, you know, he can cover that $60 million loss, no problem. Another, he's got the, Fast 11, Fast and Furious 11 coming up, and he's probably got a Jumanji 3, and, I don't know. He's probably got something else in the works. He's one of the hardest working guys in Hollywood, and certainly he's out there promoting like hell for the XFL.
Look out for the Netflix-like documentary of the setting up for the XFL. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
That's coming.
It's coming.
On Disney Plus. Boom.
Yeah. So, their own version of Hard Knocks. It's going to be the Rock Knocks.
Exactly. like all these sporting documentaries that we're seeing in today's world, these series through Wrexham and Sunderland Till I Die, and all these, they're so popular that, like, if The Rock hasn't thought of this, I'd be shocked. But I guarantee you that there's a series coming. It's only a matter of time. Yeah. So, and I think it'll get massive numbers too. So, because everyone wants that insight onto how they've set up this league over the last 2 years and how they finished the whole season, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Speaking of Netflix, our friends at Netflix are looking to get into the world of live sport. another player with a lot of money at hand, potentially for media rights, for distribution, over 200 million subscribers. They made recently an update to password sharing, which has also increased their subscriber base for the first time since COVID. So these guys, they're known for their sporting documentary series, like we just discussed, Sunderland Till I Die and all these other series, especially Formula One, I was about to say, which has really helped grow that sport. Now it's the only thing that they were missing was the live sport aspect. And they've just entered in subtly through a golfing event, a live golfing event charity. I think it's a charity-based event. And pretty much what we're seeing is that these guys are coming in a way where golf is a pretty, from what I understand, the production isn't too hard to produce because it's very stationary, and the ball, you hit the ball and they can follow the ball. Like, the way the game is actually played, it's different to your contact sports where it's action-packed. Boom, different camera angles, different this, different that. So they've started with golf to see how things play out. And I think we'll see them enter the other sports that that people like to watch, because they're probably already there.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're looking at bringing, you know, some top level personalities, micing them up on the golf course. We've seen the success of, you know, the match and the like there, you know, with you know, Steph Curry and Tom Brady playing. You've seen the Phil versus Tiger matches, and again, the miking up of the players really kind of allowed some of their, you know, individual personalities to come out. You get some great content, you know, you get some fun with that. Netflix has obviously had some success with their documentary series, you know, Last Chance U and the Drive to Survive, et cetera. And you're right. You know, I think they had been, you know, they had kicked around when Major League Baseball and MLS, you know, and Monday Night Football kind of entered into the subscriber streaming space. You know, this is a subtle entry, one that's a little bit more controllable, manageable, I should say. Not controllable is not the right word, but manageable from a standpoint of the type of organization they are, because they are. They've always been a broadcaster and a producer and a network, not as much a producer of live content, right? Golf is pretty easy. It doesn't move very fast. You know, it's you kind of know exactly where the ball's always going to go most of the time. Certainly, some of these celebrities are probably not going to be at the professional level, but there's always some good golfers out there. We've seen celebrity golf, you know, tours get. You know, get some you know, successful you know, viewership. You know, certainly the you know, the Lake Tahoe event has always been a very popular one, but it'll be interesting to see. You know, they get a taste of this, get some of those Formula One drivers showing up over the summer during their summer break. You know, getting some of the NBA players to come over, getting some Hollywood actors to step in there, and you get a nice little mix. And these celebrity events are fun. You know, so obviously there'll, you know, I'm pretty sure we're going to see Adam Sandler in there. He'll be promoting some new movie he's got out, and he'll Happy Gilmore it up and have a great time. We'll probably see Scooter McGavin show up and, in character,
Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart will be there wearing his Fabletics gear, and he'll be spouting off something about Capital One, and, you know, it'll play itself out. There's a lot of built-in, you know, content, some built-in sponsorship relationships. Don't think that, you know, they're not going to try to get Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney to show up and watch that part of their experience there end up in their series for a little cross-pollinization to tip the cap to each other. You'll start seeing some of that because they're over here playing this summer, aren't they? They got four matches. I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be fun to watch. You know, interesting to see kind of how successful it is, how many people tune in. But I think it'll be delightful theater for us to tune in from our standpoint, because we're over here going, why didn't we think of that? Why didn't we bring that to Netflix? We could have done that. So it'll be neat. It'll be interesting to see kind of what that plays out and you know, how it all goes.
Interesting. Let's watch from far and come back and visit this conversation once the event actually happens. Moving on to our last talking point, the Stanley Cup. What's happening there? You're a big follower. Talk to us.
Speaking of Vegas. Speaking of Vegas, there is a new resident in Las Vegas tonight. His name is Lord Stanley. He has left his cup in the building. And there's definitely an all-night party going on at the T-Mobile Center as the Las Vegas Golden Knights captured their first Stanley Cup tonight with a 9-3 victory over the Florida Panthers. And Lord Stanley Cup has been lifted on the ice and is no doubt full of name your beverage tonight. It is full of it, and they are celebrating, and it's one of the great celebrations in sport. Now, you know, and I say that, you know, respectfully to, you know, we watched last night as Larry O'Brien trophies handed out, and it's certainly a a great trophy, the Lombardi Award being handed out. But those are all there's very few team trophies that have the history that Lord Stanley Cup has. The names of all the past winners are inscribed on it. And it is the biggest party animal of every of any team trophy in sport. We just watched Man City going through with their Champions League Cup. Certainly some beverages consumed from that cup as well. But Lord Stanley Cup has been doing this for 125 years. And it holds a great tradition that each player in the organization gets to get the cup for a day. So it travels, and it travels with two handlers that bring that trophy to wherever it's going to go. And they, clean it up, shine it up. And in some cases they fix it up because it's gotten a few dents for being dropped and all that kind of stuff. But, if that's a trophy that could ever talk, it has the greatest stories in sport to tell, because it's gone to many places. It's experienced many things, and it is just a great tradition. And now, a city that we've talked about on numerous podcasts, Las Vegas, has now gotten a championship last year with the Las Vegas Aces in the WNBA. Now they have a historic and iconic championship with the Stanley Cup and the Las Vegas Golden Knights. They will host the Super Bowl next year. So the Lombardi Trophy will be awarded in Vegas. But unless the Raiders are in that game, it will be not taking up residence like Lord Stanley Cup is. So we're wrapping up obviously our U.S. league season, the big leagues, so obviously baseball is, mid-season will be all-star break around the corner. But with the NBA and the NHL wrapping up this week, two major, leagues, wrapping up here, and a great celebration last night with Denver winning their first, and obviously tonight another first, and the Golden Knights bringing home the Stanley Cup in Las Vegas. I've been part of organizations that have won it in the past, and having been a member of an alumni member, if you will, of the Los Angeles Kings, they won it twice, and so I got to attend a couple of those cup trophy parties, and it's special, my friend. I'll tell you, there's a lot of great celebrations out there. You got the claret jug with the Open Championship, and there's been a few beverages consumed out of that as well. Lord Stanley Cup is one historically, and to your point, winning that championship is going to be a big boost, not only for Las Vegas but for that organization. Sponsorship wise, season ticket wise, now you're a Stanley Cup champion. There's a lot that goes with that. There's going to be a banner hung, the first banner hung in T-Mobile Arena, for their anchor tenant. It's an exciting time and exciting night, and just an emphatic win tonight. It was over in the first period, frankly. So it was really two periods of skating that led to a 9-3 victory tonight. And congratulations to, Bill Foley and his organization, the first major sports franchise that moved to Las Vegas 6 years ago. And really, they burst the dam. Raiders came. Formula One has now come. Looks like the A's are trying to come. And there's rumors that MLS and the NBA are not far behind. So that is Vegas's first true major professional sports team. And tonight they got, they brought home the ultimate prize in their league, and congratulations to them.
Speaking of the A's, just quickly, their fans are pretty much organizing a protest. And they're giving out T-shirts, free T-shirts that pretty much say they want the owners out. and they're going to be wearing like 7,000 of them, and they're going to fill the stadium with people wearing those t-shirts just to show the fans and the league that the fans are there. It's the owners that are the problem. And we're almost seeing a similar situation to the Glazers and Manchester United, but these guys have taken it to a whole new level. So good luck to the A's. They're going to need it because, yeah, interesting times.
Well, you know, their referendum for their stadium in Las Vegas still outstanding. Didn't go to vote before the break. You know, they're going to put 30 or 40,000 people in the ballpark, you know, wearing sell on their jerseys, sending a loud and clear message to Rob Manfred and the other owners that, you know, Oakland, you know, the fans want them to stay. You know, and again, this is one of those things where the fans want to go see the A's play. They need a new ballpark. The city needs to find a way to play ball, pardon the pun, and the owners need to quit leveraging, you know, moving. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, Oakland's lost, you know, the Warriors and the Raiders because of their inability to come up with, you know, a viable, you know, arena or stadium relationship or deal. And, you know, I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago. I don't know if baseball is the right fit for Vegas. And I don't know how many people are going to go watch the A's play if they stink. Certainly, you know, in Vegas, now you got a Stanley Cup champion. You've got an NFL team. You've got Formula One coming, you know, potentially, you know, got NASCAR there. You got plenty of things to do in Vegas. And I don't know how much the hotel casinos are going to want to always be sending their top gamblers out to sporting events every night when they should be at their high limit tables. So, you know, the economics of what built that city is not putting whales in luxury suites. It's, you know, bringing whales into the city and putting them in a, you know, feeding them nice dinner and comping their room and saying, get over to the high limit tables and lose a little bit more money for me. So, we'll see how that works. But yeah, the A's are a little reverse boycott, I guess they're calling it. Pack the stadium and send a message to the league. We'll see if they're listening and watching.
There you go. Let's see how that plays out. All right, that brings us to the end of our segment. As always, with every single show, I give you the final say with your parting words.
Well, it's U.S. Open week, and it's the first major after the merger, and a merger that is still making news, and now has some legislative interest in it as well. But you know, Los Angeles Country Club is hosting the U.S. Open this week, and so the world's top golfers are once again coming together, and now for the first time in the past couple years, those LIV golfers and the PGA Tour golfers are part of the same family. You know, they're part of the same family now. They're no longer bad guys. I don't know. Rory may still think they're bad guys, right? You know, we're seeing, you know, Brooks Koepka and John Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, Rory, you know, all at, you know, potentially, you know, sitting at the top of the betting boards. So, you know, looking forward to seeing, you know, what is arguably one of the hardest majors to win. See how this leaderboard plays out this week in Los Angeles. Excited for that, and you know, certainly excited to, you know, follow the, you know, the legislative interest in this this merger to see. You know, I don't know what they hope to find, but always kind of curious to, you know, when legalese finds its way into sport and the game of golf. So U.S. Open week, everybody enjoy it. We'll chat about it next week, from the road, actually. But yeah, we'll look forward to another episode next week.
All right, everyone. Thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you, Rob, once again. Week in, week out, you're definitely here for us. And to everybody who's tuned in and will be listening to us through our podcast channels, thank you all. Take care, everyone. And that's all from us. Peace.
Take care.